May it please the court. Mr. Winkie. What is not in dispute in this case is that Mr. Winkie intentionally caused thousands of dollars belonging to his clients to be taken out of his trust account and to be used for his own personal expenditures. Mr. Winkie has made numerous admissions and admits that in the case of clients Huskies and Crosses, he knew he was not entitled to his clients' money. But he purposely caused the money to be taken out of his client's trust account and used for things like a trip to China, credit card payments, payments to Walmart, and the like. What appears to be at issue in this case is Mr. Winkie's belief that his intention to repay the money or to temporarily use it, as he states in his brief, constitutes something different than misappropriation and a sanction less than that of disbarment. This court has repeatedly stated and reiterated in the case of Ferris that when an attorney repeatedly transfers funds from a trust account to an operating account and those funds are used for personal expenditures, as they were here, the attorney in question has engaged in misappropriation. Moreover, this court has specifically held in the matter of Miller that when an attorney borrows money from a client without the client's consent, it is misappropriation, and it is not excused by the attorney's intent to repay the money later on. The fact is that the Huskies and Crosses in this case were deprived of their money for almost 2 years, which means that even were Mr. Winkie correct about the state of the law, it would be unreasonable to characterize the theft of this client money as having been borrowed or temporarily used. When Mr. Winkie's clients, the Huskies and the Crosses, sold their land, over $14,000 in proceeds were deposited into Mr. Winkie's trust account. This occurred in March of 2015. A mere 2 days later, Mr. Winkie withdrew $5,666 of that money. Every several days thereafter, Mr. Winkie transferred money into his operating account such that the money was completely depleted by the end of June. Though much of the money had been transferred to his operating account, the balance in Mr. Winkie's operating account reached $12.23 by July of 2015, and that's how we know that the entirety of the money from the Huskies and Crosses was depleted. Bank records from Mr. Winkie's trust and operating account indicate that Mr. Winkie made large cash withdrawals, which Mr. Winkie later testified were for a trip to China. Payments were made to the IRS, to credit card companies. Mr. Winkie has stated that he wanted to take that money to China in case he had expenses, and that it was his intention to borrow the money, but he ended up spending that money and was unable to refund the money to his clients. Compounding that misappropriation was Mr. Winkie's attempts to avoid and deceive the Huskies and Crosses. Brandon Huskie testified that from March to December of 2015, they repeatedly called Mr. Winkie, they emailed, they asked about the receipt of their money, but that Mr. Winkie postponed distribution of those funds by telling them things like the title company had held up the money, or that he had just put it in the mail when he had not, or that he hurt his knee and was unable to meet with them at the time that they were scheduled to discuss receipt of the funds. By December of 2015, Mr. Winkie did admit to his clients that he had taken their money, but he failed to repay the funds until a full year later, after the Huskies and Crosses had taken the extraordinary measure of filing a complaint with the OCDC, but also instituting a fee dispute resolution complaint in September of 2016 because they testified they didn't know what else to do to get their money back. In the case of Mr. Winkie's client, Randy Otto, Mr. Otto received a judgment in the amount of almost $24,000. After filing a wage garnishment, Mr. Winkie took possession of the garnishment checks as they were issued by the court. records over the course of time indicate that Mr. Winkie was receiving checks but not depositing them timely into his client trust account. The checks that were deposited were misappropriated in that Mr. Winkie's balance in his trust account frequently fell below what he was supposed to be holding for Mr. Otto. What was curious about this situation is that Mr. Winkie did make distributions to Mr. Otto, but frequently not for the full amount that was owed, and frequently not for the amount that Mr. Winkie might have even had in his possession at the time. Much like the Huskies and Crosses, Mr. Otto had to take the extraordinary measure of instituting a civil action against Mr. Winkie in order to collect the remainder of his funds. In both of these cases, Mr. Winkie's clients had earmarked this money as a way to improve their financial situation. Brandon Husky testified that they intended to invest the money in their farming operation. Instead, they spent nearly 2 years trying to collect this money that was rightfully theirs.
It took 20 months, but they were eventually paid, I'm assuming without any interest or any other cost for their delay.
Yes, through the fee dispute resolution process, Mr. Winkie paid them the money that was owed at the time. It's my understanding that Mr. Winkie said that he waived his legal fees as part of the repayment, but no, I don't believe any additional interest was added.
It was 20 months later.
20 months later, yes, correct. Which speaks really to the harm that these clients endured. Mr. Winkie has stated that these clients didn't suffer any financial harm, but that simply isn't the case. In addition to the court fees that they paid, there was the money that was lost in income that they had intended to generate. Mr. Otto was using those garnishment checks to repay a construction loan, and when that money was not available, he had to go out and get a second loan with interest. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Winkie's assertion is not correct. These clients were harmed, but even if they hadn't been, in the case of N. Ray Kohlmeyer, this court recognized that restitution does not deprive the public of its right to be protected against an unsafe member of the bar, nor does it deprive the courts of their right to have attorneys as officers who abide by their high duty to the public, the courts, and the profession. With respect to Mr. Winkie's trust account, in keeping with his duty to the public and the legal system, attorneys are tasked with keeping strict adherence to the trust accounting rules as set forth by this court. Following the complaints of the Huskies and the Crosses, the OCDC conducted an audit of Mr. Winkie's trust account and found it to be in disarray. Records were largely insufficient to allow identification of a lot of client matters, deposited items, cash withdrawals, but also indicated that Mr. Winkie was commingling personal funds with client money and making repeated payments out of his trust account to his wife, his employee, his children's daycare. Having heard evidence from the informant and from Mr. Winkie, the DHP in this case found 16 separate conduct violations, including knowing misappropriation, and recommended that Mr. Winkie be disbarred, with which an informant has concurred. According to this court in the Ehler case, the conversion of client funds necessarily involves an act of deceit and misrepresentation. In addition to that, Mr. Winkie was repeatedly untruthful with his clients, telling them that the money was forthcoming when it simply was not. ABA Standard 4.6 provides that in cases where an attorney engages in deceit towards a client, disbarment is generally appropriate. This court also held in Ferris that disbarment is the baseline sanction for misappropriation. Mr. Winkie has asserted that these actions do not indicate that he is unfit to continue in the practice of the law, and that he should be placed on probation. But the truth of the matter is that there's no program or CLE or mechanism that we know of that can be employed to compel an attorney to be honest, which is a fundamental necessity for the continued practice of law.
Has he acknowledged the wrongfulness of his conduct? Any remorse and so forth?
He has admitted the violations occurred, but my concern or our concern is that he has failed to recognize the severity of the conduct or recognized the effect that it had on his clients. And this has it been indicated by Mr. Winkie's suggestion that he be placed on probation and that his clients were not harmed. We do recognize that while the baseline sanction is disbarment in cases of misappropriation, dishonesty, deceit, this court has established that it will consider aggravating and mitigating circumstances. In this case, respondent's use of client money for personal expenditures has indicated a selfish motive. There's a pattern of misconduct, there's multiple offenses, and there's a vulnerability of the victims. Mr. Winkie was forthright and forthcoming in his admissions before the OCDC and the disciplinary hearing panel, which constitute a mitigating circumstance in this case. However, it's our opinion that it simply is not enough to overcome the gravity of the misconduct and indicates that Mr. Winkie should no longer be practicing law.
You may proceed.
Obviously, as the respondent in this matter, it's a little difficult for me to get the pronouns and I and respondents through, but as the informant advised, there indeed was a misuse of client money. There's never been an indication or a suggestion that that was going to be not accepted or agreed with. And I think clearly, I think the records and the evidence and the efforts of the OCDC has proceeded. The trust accounts and this, myself, the respondent, probably a poster-sized example of how not to run a trust account. Whether or not that justifies somebody that's not able to be fixed or able to continue the bar, obviously is a question for court. With regard to, I guess, the Husky money and question that was raised, there was interest paid. That was part of the fee dispute, which OCDC kind of brought forth, was kind of questionable in its nature. I don't know why they chose to do that at the same time as the bar complaint, but it seemed like a mechanism to get things resolved, so it was utilized. And as part of that, the agreement was reached to make the full payment, waive all legal fees that would have been earned in the matter, and provide the Crosses and Huskies with some interest. That was done. With regard to Mr. Otto, there was just a ongoing scenario there where things just didn't get done like they should have. Ultimately, Mr. Otto was also paid what he requested, which I believe included a little bit of extra compensation. Legal fees were not fully charged in that matter and kind of went away, parted ways as we could. With regard to, I guess, mitigating factors and such, I mean, it's understood OCDC is stated from day one, I guess, once contact was made, that disbarment was the likely prospect. It seemed, I guess, a larger consequence of first time, I guess, with facing discipline than was believed or expected. But despite the OCDC's complaint or statements to the contrary, and I don't want the court to believe that a trip to China was just some kind of frivolous affair. There was an adoption that was occurring around that time frame. Bonnet took some additional money that clearly wasn't his, i.e. the client's, to China to help make sure that that adoption went through. And in a perfect storm of situations, there was respondent suffered a leg injury while in China and then returned to the U.S., wasn't able to quite work where we could, and had two adopted children with medical needs that had some expenses as well. So the summer of 2015 was spent trying to deal with all that with a belief that Ross Huskies would be made whole in short order, and that never happened. It did indeed take until December 2016 to make that happen. Ultimately, respondent basically refinanced his house in order to make that happen.
Is that when the other occurrence occurred too? The other client's money was taken?
I think it was around that same time. That was a case that had been going on for a number of years, predating 2015. I don't recall off the top of my head when the garnishment checks started coming around, but I think that same time frame was probably in the same.
What could have made you think you could take a client's money and get an unauthorized loan and without permission of the client and not face consequences for that?
I'll be honest. It was a belief that it would be rectified within a short time of returning from China. There was a personal injury suit that was believed to be coming in by the time of return, and the money distribution the real estate proceeds were not able to be paid out before the trip to China anyway. Not saying that that's justification or proper, but that's probably the faulty mindset that was in play at the time.
But just this question is at the heart of this matter. You knew when you took that money that it wasn't just a mistake, that it wasn't just a problem with not monitoring your trust account. You knew this was their money, and you just thought you could be able to pay it back later. Is that accurate?
Honestly, there was no expectation that the money would even be used in China. It was taken as a worst case scenario.
But yes, going back to my original, that you knew that was your client's money. This wasn't just a mistake as to whether or not
a very small amount of it was at that time. My belief would have been my funds as far as my legal fees. But clearly, 90-95% of it was not something that I felt I had any entitlement to.
Or
that
there and was, you knew that at the time.
Yes, Your Honor. I don't know what all to kind of say. I almost kind of here just at the mercy of the court. I guess my brief contains some reference to some cases that suggest that disbarment is an ultimate sanction, that it's up to this court to decide if the person standing in front of you is somebody that should not be practicing law any further. There's no OCDC suggested, there's no CLEs to send me to, or no fixes to address honesty. Well, I disagree that I'm a dishonest person, I guess. I don't feel that that's...
Mr. Wink, you may be a wonderful person and a good-hearted person, but the concern here is how does this make the profession look? If you knowingly took a client's money and we didn't, we put you on probation or even stay a suspension, how does that look to the public? By acknowledging that something we would do. Again, you may be a wonderful man, family, but this is something we are entrusted to protect, a profession that is near and dear to many people, not only in the state, but in this country. And that is what we struggle with.
And I don't doubt or dispute that there's some punishment warranted. I mean, clearly, that's the situation. I understand that. I guess from my perspective, I've performed these legal services essentially for either no pay or partial pay. I repaid all the money that was owed them plus additional. So in some ways, I think punishment's already been meted out as far as...
Well, that just makes it not theft, doesn't it? Hmm? That just makes it not theft and not criminal, perhaps. But if you knowingly took client money, being aware of it, if we were to give you a lesser sanction, would that suggest to other attorneys that they could do the same?
I can't speak to them. I would believe that, certainly I can't imagine anybody wants to be here in front of this panel trying to explain the situation, Judge. And I don't know what their motives are.
Have assurance if you got in, and I understand it was a unique confluence of circumstances that came together, but what if there's another one? How do we know how you'd react?
I think this has suggested to me I probably never should have been in solo practice in the first place. I need somebody helping guide me through this process. I ended up in solo practice not by choice, but by prior firm that I worked with saying they couldn't make payroll. I had student loans and legal education that need to be used in some capacity, so that's what I pursued. Certainly someone, as I kind of suggested at some point in this process, a mentoring scenario, some kind of supervised probation, I don't know if that's even a situation. I don't feel that I can't be, I guess, fixed, I think is what I used in the panel scenario.
In effect, you're arguing that the events for which you have been found to violate the rules are an aberration from your normal person and practice.
The bulk of my practice is family law. This was a strange situation. I even did a real estate transaction. So the bulk of my transactions are family law, frankly.
Not just the nature of the actions, but you filed letters from others saying that they find you to be an honorable person. And I take from your argument to us, you're saying what you did during 15 and whether before or after was contrary to your normal nature.
I would agree with that. The effort to adopt the children from China was a 9-month process, and at the time that we were facing that trip, I had no idea what I was going to be looking at across the Pacific, and I wanted to make sure that I was covering any contingency, any possible contingency. I erred tremendously in taking client money to pad my pockets for a contingency, and then it just happened to be one of those scenarios that some of those black clouds came and I wasn't able to, I had to dip into client money that shouldn't have been touched.
Did you seek a personal loan from bank or from family?
At that time, we tapped out a lot of family and all of the loans possible that we could. The adoption ran about $40,000, and we were hitting up family quite a bit heading into it. After the fact, I kept thinking that I was going to bring through this personal injury suit that didn't come through for a good year, and it took it a while to make that happen, and I didn't have a lot of family that was able to. I ultimately did ask. That was one of the things that crosses. When I met with them in December 2015, I told them I would go seek out family members to loan me money to get them made whole after that. And I did make requests to family, and they turned me down. And it's ultimately why I pursued the path of refinancing the house, which 4 months into the first process failed because I made one house payment late. And so then I had to restart that process. I view it to be an aberration. I actually learned more about trust account procedures in this process than I knew before. The one point I had appointed counsel at the time of the DHP hearing, and I guess that was a very eye-opening experience as far as the many things that I have done incorrectly with my trust account, and I have made efforts to fix that. I'm not going to say it's perfect yet, but it's certainly far better than it had been. I guess I'm asking that I don't feel that I'm somebody that can't or shouldn't be before the bar. I don't feel that I'm a danger to the public, despite informants' claims to the contrary. I don't know that I feel that I'm completely without morals or the ability to, I don't know, stand pat. I think I've, as far as the mitigating factors go, I don't know. I judge. I think it's been one of those scenarios here where this has been a very remarkable occasion, and I certainly don't want to deal with it. Have to come back to you all again and say, oops, remember when I showed up in November? I guess I was wrong then. I couldn't fix myself. I do feel that I could be put back on the right track. I have six figures in student loans and 14 years invested in this career. I sure don't want to see it sent away over $6,000 and has been repaid, or the failure to keep my trust account in line with rules. Thank you for your time and consideration. And
do you have any rebuttal, Counselor?
I want to address one or two things. Mr. Winkie stated that these were little services that he provided for little or no money. I find that a little bit offensive, and I think it speaks to Mr. Winkie's inability to grasp the severity and recognize the wrongfulness of what he's done. These clients came to him to provide a service. It was a service that was important to them. It was a service that they paid for, and they thought they were encountering a professional. Morals aside and personal situations aside, that was Mr. Winkie's responsibility, to provide a professional service, and he failed to do that. Irrespective of the intentional misappropriation that coincided with Mr. Winkie's trip to China, the case of Randy Otto demonstrates that these misappropriations were occurring before the trip to China. Mr. Otto's checks began to be deposited in August of 2014, and all of that occurred in 2015. With respect to Mr. Otto, the balance was falling below what was supposed to be held in trust. When Mr. Winkie made distributions to Mr. Otto, it was not for the full amount. Sometimes Mr. Winkie had that amount in his possession, but he still didn't distribute that to Mr. Otto.
It's obvious that he took the money out of the trust account because he was in financial trouble. Is there any information in the record about his financial condition today or at the time of the hearing?
At the time of the hearing, Mr. Winkie testified as to his financial situation, and I think he stated something similar to the court. He had student loan debt. I believe he had a boat payment that he was making, as well as a mortgage. Expenses, quite frankly, that a lot of attorneys have, and it doesn't lead them to misappropriate client money.
But his expenses that exceed his income?
Quite certainly, yes. Or quite possibly. Unless there are any questions for the court, we would reiterate that we believe that disbarment is the appropriate sanction in this case.
Case is submitted.